What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for November 20th, 2019. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the Rogue One at Gary Whitta.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
End of the year is fast approaching. It's coming like right
so
up
fast.
On us. Like
I know,
Thanksgiving's
I know.
Next week.
Yeah.
Is it?
Thanksgiving's next week?
I've got my. I found a Christmas. Mug
I know
in your,
this is the problem. I literally
in your kitchen cabinet.
Kevin said, "Hey, are you guys ready?" And I said, "Born ready." And he's like, "All right, Mike's going live." And I looked over. Kevin, we are not ready. I need you to go to my desk. I need you to go to the top. The middle drawer. Pull it out. There's chalk in there. Gary, grab the. We have to. It's the countdown to Christmas cup. You have to put the countdown to Christmas on it.
Hey Siri, how many days until Christmas?
Right,
big fat 35 on here.
How you been, Gary?
I've been good. I've been a little bit overwhelmed, busy.
What movie are you writing this time? What are you writing? Comic book? What's happening?
We've got family staying with us at the moment. It's like the house is chaotic. I am. It's just one of those things where like just a lot of projects have all kind of like deadline wise have all kind of crashed together at once, and I'm just trying to kind of put out fires here, there, and everywhere.
How hard is it for you? I mean, I know it's hard for people who work at home, but for something especially, thank you very much, Kevin. We need this. This is desperate information. For someone that has to be so self-motivated to go down there and write scripts, do things like that, when you have family over, when we get to the holidays and your daughter has time off of school, is that stress you out even worse? Or does everybody know that when daddy goes downstairs, leave him alone?
I mean, to some extent, but like I always, you know, I never want to be that guy in the bad Hollywood movie who realizes that, you know, he never had time for his kids because he was too, every time that my kid comes up to me and says, "Daddy, will you play with me?" or whatever, and I say, like, "Not now, sweetie, I'm working." Like, I just feel like, just feels like a little, I'm that guy, and you never want to be that guy.
Sure.
So I always try to make time for my kid. Sometimes I'll just blow off the whole day.
Yeah.
Or like a chunk of the day or whatever, because I just hate that feeling of like having to turn my kid. Sometimes you've got to do it because like, I've really got to do the work.
You got to keep your clothes on her back, right?
You'll find this all out for yourself one day when there are lots of little Gregs and Jens running around.
Yeah.
And you'll get it. It's not easy. I think you will make a very good dad, actually.
Thank you.
I think you'll be an excellent dad.
I'm excited about it because in the beginning, you know, I'll be able to do the shows with them and the baby Bjorn. And then when they get a little older, put them in the spare room, put a Twitch cam on them, give out a private link to everybody on Patreon who wants to go watch the kid grow up.
Wow, that's not creepy at all.
Not at all. Hey, today we're going to talk about...
Wait. Before we get into the show, I shouldn't... This is 35 days until Christmas.
Yeah.
But what we really need to do is shave 8 days off that and have this say, Kevin, how many days until Cats... Because that's what I really care about. We're going to see Cats, right? You and me?
We are.
We're going.
There is a small chance that I won't be
able
to
Don't do this to me.
It's...
I was part of this conversation yesterday.
There's a small chance that what?
That I won't be able to go.
Why? And why is that?
I can't talk about it.
He can't talk about it on the air.
All right, well, this was part of the whole deal.
No,
you and I were going to go.
I understand. Should I
Kevin
mute it?
Floated this out yesterday. What?
Should I mute
Yeah,
it?
Go ahead. We're going to mute the mics in a second so Kevin
Not
can explain.
Not only did you first
hold
float
on,
the
he's
idea.
Just muted the mics.
All right. I'm sorry you didn't get to hear that, but just know from someone who did hear it, that excuse was fucking bull. That's weak as shit. That is a weak ass fucking excuse.
Would you want
to, Kevin? I'm trusting you to make the right choice.
First of all,
the right choice.
I believe that there's a good 30% chance you're gonna flake. Just for
It's higher than that.
There's only zero chance. I just brought it up out of nowhere. I'm the one saying you're the one that brought up this idea. You're
cats.
The one that sent me the ticket saying. You're the one said, "Here's the date. I put it in. It's in my calendar. I'm in." All of this and then pull the rug.
I also was like, "Hey, we shouldn't talk about it."
For something which, frankly, you're going to have many other opportunities to do. You're only going to have one opportunity to do this.
Wow, look at that.
So you've got to decide.
He's not wrong.
Look,
he's not.
You've got to decide what's important to you, Kevin. That's all.
Man, stay tuned, everybody. What will be important to Kevin?
I'm
you know
so
what I mean?
Scared.
Today on this show, though, we're going to talk about Borderlands getting a big update, Half-Life rumors, and our weakness interpreting Bobby Kotick, because this It's Kind of Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, with your questions, comments, concerns, and everything under the video game sun. Then tune in to watch us record the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you're watching live, you have a special job. Go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Tell us what we screw up as we screw it up, so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, and listening on podcast services around the globe.
It's going to be a bad show, Greg, because I've got I'm in a fucking bad mood now.
Yeah,
Kevin's put me in a really bad mood.
I'm so sorry, Kevin.
He's thrown me off. I've been so excited about this for weeks now.
I've been
and I have been DMing about our own little back channel going. And Kevin's been the instigator. He's the one sending me the screening tickets going, hey, you want to go? Let's go.
To be fair, you were the one that put the idea out there, and I want to do it. It is like, ask anyone. When I got the invite to go see Cats, I was like, whoa, this is happening. I made a big deal about it.
Yeah, and now what?
I'm with you, Gary.
God damn it, Craig. You chill out.
I'm just saying, do you have another shot the next day? You know? What's going to change?
Is that
going to change overnight?
You could do the thing the next day?
I hate you so much. I don't know if I can do the thing the next day.
I love it. I love watching him squirm.
Well, it's just, this is painful. This is painful. I don't want to hurt this.
Let me just tell you something. If I had the same choice,
uh-huh.
I would still be. I would simply say, "Hey, I would love that, but I've already made plans with Kevin." And I'm a loyal guy. I'm a loyal friend. I'm not going to get him all excited about doing this thing together.
Hear me out. What if I cut Greg from the thing I'm going to do on Tuesday and I put you in instead? Because Greg's a bitch. You know what I mean?
Wait. So instead of going to see Cats on Tuesday, you and I do the other thing.
Yeah.
I'd rather do Cats, to be honest with you.
Look at him. That's a man right there.
That's crazy.
That's a man right there. He loves bad movies.
We'll talk about it after the show.
Okay. All right.
Housekeeping for you. London calling. Remember, Kind of Funny. Myself, Tim, and Nick are headed to London this weekend. Tomorrow we ship off. You can no longer come to the Kind of Funny World Tour meet and greet. We put up tickets. They got gone in like 2 seconds. Sorry about that. But if you want to see the community, you can hit up MC Fixer on Twitter. He has a whole bunch of community events happening Thursday through Monday, alongside, of course, Mark Freeman. But I'm sending them all to one places.
What's the main event?
The main event is the Kind of Funny World Tour meet and greet.
And where is that?
Can't tell you.
Oh,
if you got a ticket. No, if you got a ticket, you know.
Oh.
We just don't
okay.
want
you don't want everyone.
We don't want the doors
up.
Being
right,
we saw the we've seen the movies with the who's the guy? John and Ringo and
Hard Day's Night.
That's one
when they're
where they
the
chase them through the streets. We don't want to.
You imagine
like
that might be what's going to happen.
100%.
Lots
oh
of like
God.
Teenage girls tearing their hair out.
No, 30-something men.
Overweight
30-something men like myself
chasing you down the
yeah,
street.
Yeah, exactly. Vitas in hand. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And you all piling into a taxi cab and then getting out the
Uber.
Other side.
Yeah, probably an Uber.
Yeah, in an Uber.
Yeah. I just can't have that.
I got one tip for you when you're in London. You should definitely do that Oi Governor act of yours as much.
They love it over there because
they
love it over there.
They can't get enough of it.
Every time I go up and I'd go to the bar and I'll say, "Hey, Oi, Governor, can I have a beer?" That's a good one.
It's respectful.
We'll bring you the beer. We're going to get you a special beer. We'll bring it. Go sit down. I was like, wow, what service.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Blackjack, Zach Parsley, and Mohammed. Today we're brought to you by Third Love, Upstart, and Quip, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Kevin's so uncomfortable. I love it.
Should be.
6 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Because he wants to be your friend so badly. You know what I mean?
It's not. I mean, all evidence to the contrary.
I know. It's sad to see, you know?
Deeds, not words.
Number one, Borderlands put out a bunch of information in the Borderlands show today, hosted by me and Fran. The top level stuff goes like this. The big old piece of story DLC is coming. It's called Moxie's Heist of the Handsome Jackpot. It arrives on December 19th. It's around 7 hours of content, give or take how you play, which is a hefty amount there. It's included in the season pass and, of course, the special editions if you bought that, whatever. But the idea here, Gary, is we're going and infiltrating Handsome Jack's casino. In an Ocean's 12 or 11 or whatever the
sounds
hell.
Sounds like fun.
Type like heist. Yeah. Are you still playing Borderlands?
No, but I feel like I should. I was really. I don't know why I dropped off because I was really enjoying the time that I spent with the game. And then, like, I don't know, just life came along and I stopped playing. But I feel like I should. I mean, I've got the version of the game that I've got had the season pass. With, I'll get all this content.
I forget. Did you make the right choice in playing PlayStation, or did you play somewhere else?
PlayStation. You and I played together.
It's a blink. When I come back, in this, I'm platinuming it during my Christmas break.
Okay.
So I'll be on a lot. You
all right. Okay. Yeah. I might. I mean, I've got some catching up to do, but I really enjoyed it.
That's the whole thing about.
And it seems like Gearbox are doing a good job of, you know, the roadmap and all that. Like, yep. It's all going according to plan. It seems.
Yeah, I talked about it on the Borderlands show, obviously, but of course we're paid to host that show. So if you didn't believe it there, I understand. They let me say whatever I want there. They let me say whatever I want here. I'm incredibly impressed with the way they respond to the audience. Of like, legitimately, like, this is our third show for the Borderlands show. Every one of them has been, here are answers to your questions. You might not like them, but we know there's problems. We're working on it. Here's how we're trying to fix it. Here's where we go.
And I mean, and you know, like most games, Borderlands did not have a perfect launch, but it was better than most.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't have any problems with it out of the box.
Yeah.
It worked.
Problems were like, the menus are really laggy on certain things, which is about to come up in the Day 60s patch. People wanted more bank space. They wanted more machines like I did to go sell stuff.
But that's all minor stuff, though. You compare that to like Fallout 76 and Anthem and other games that have come out of the box. Isn't it remarkable now that because that's now the norm, we expect games to launch in a broken state.
Yeah.
Remember when Division 2 came out earlier this year, and now Borderlands, they make big news just by doing what is working as advertised. That's now like a big deal. Oh my god, this game actually does what it says it was going to do. It's not all fucked up and broken.
I know, right? It's sad.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Game of the year.
Speaking of them communicating things, though, so Malawan Takedown comes out tomorrow, which is the raid that's not a raid and is incredibly tough. Fran and I tried playing it with the machines they brought for the Borderlands show, but we were playing it solo and it was crushingly hard. You need to have a team. However, that comes out tomorrow, and then around then is what I said in the Borderlands show, and we didn't have any graphics, so it's around then, super soon around then, so does the 60-day patch. I think it might be tomorrow.
And
might
this
be
is
today,
the patch that's
going
to address all the concerns.
Well, they've been doing a bunch of different hot fixes, but these are the big patch stuff for the 60-day patch is this. Bank increase is going from 50 to 300, which is huge for everybody. Assign drops for legendary loot. All legendaries are now assigned to specific named mobs and bosses throughout the base game. Proving grounds, seasonal content like Bloody Harvest and Takedowns. With the sheer size of the loot pool being what it is, players can expect multiple legendaries assigned to each boss with a pretty generous drop rate to start, which may get tweaked over time. Again, this was a big thing that you want a certain gun. It was all randomized. How are you going to get it? Now you know that boss X will drop whatever. Sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, you understand.
Each boss has a specific loot table.
You can go get stuff. Exactly, right. Okay. Yeah. Performance improvements that eliminate a lot of hitching when navigating the inventory menu, as well as various inventory menu UI custom or optimizations. In general, UI performance improvements. These improvements also apply to split-screen co-op. They're adding in Mayhem Mode 4. This is slightly different than Mayhem 1, 2, and 3. In the original three Mayhem modes, players had to potentially deal with negative modifiers, such as negative 30% damage with an increase to something else. Gearbox are essentially removing the negative penalties that apply to players. There will only be two random modifiers, one that applies to a bonus, one that applies a bonus to players, and one that applies a bonus to enemies. Also, a new batch of legendary gear will drop while in Mayhem 4 to reward those players who are truly up to the challenge. More vending machines, which was one of my big complaints, so you can sell stuff on the run more often.
That's handy.
If you're one of these PC dorks, DX12 is now on by default. Fran tried to explain it to me on the show. I have no idea what he means. More bug fixes and stability improvements are coming. And then Gearbox is also making Borderlands 3 free to play on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One from November 21st through the 24th, so you can jump in and check out
That
stuff.
Yeah. They're doing a good job with Borderlands.
Agreed. Yeah, I know. And again, I know it's easy to... you're listening to Kind of Funny Games Daily. You know who I am. It'd be easy if you didn't know who I was to say I'm a sellout or whatever, but I was talking to Jen about it today, watching the chat, of just how it's so rare that you see a company, both 2K and Gearbox, right, delivering what people want month after month to where the chat isn't toxic. On Twitch, right? The people, 8,000 people were watching live, and they were all
super into it. They actually have like a positive community.
Yeah. If you're month to month still into Borderlands, and granted, the community's expanded quite a bit because Borderlands 3 was so successful. They've done a great job of fostering a community that actually cares about it and understands what's going on.
It's a really good game, and I'm surprised to not see it more at least in the conversation. For Game of the Year. I enjoyed it. Well, I mean, it's not... I don't think it would be Game of the Year, but I mean, I think if you're going to do, like, top 10, maybe it would be in top 10 Games of the Year. Sorry, what's that, Kevin?
I'm saying, yeah, for me, it would be up there.
No, like, I'm just saying, did you have something to add?
I was just going to...
What? Sorry, what?
Damn, you salted the earth, Kev.
I don't know. I don't know if you're still monitoring the show or if you've got some better opportunity came up in the last 5 minutes that you may have... switched over to. Are you more interested in that now? I don't know.
I'm also writing in a journal.
You're writing in a journal?
Yeah.
Is it about how much you hate me?
I don't hate you, Gary. I can't hate you. You helped make Rogue One a fantastic movie.
Your emotions, your emotions towards me are far more complicated and confusing. I get it. I get that a lot. We are going to see Cats. I'm not going to let this drop. We're going. Screen Cats. It's too good an idea. See, like, you want to do it. You naturally want to do it.
I do want to.
Every fiber in your body just naturally goes like that. So yeah, they've done. I really. It's a good question. Why did I stop playing? I don't know. I just kind of fell off.
Well, there's maybe a million. Things
I think another
going
game
on.
Came along or something. And because it's hard this time of year, you know, I've got such a backlog right now of games that I want to. I think it was Luigi's Mansion because something came along. I don't know, but I really, you know, it doesn't look like every other game. It's got a unique look. It's goofy. It's silly. It's fun. The gunplay and the combat is really satisfying. There's lots of loot. Like it's just a crowd pleasing. It's a good popcorn game.
To your comment, right? And I assume you're talking about, obviously, Game Awards nominations came out yesterday, right?
I mean, just in general. I mean, I think that, you know, you're going to see more of the awards conversations beginning now.
Yeah.
And I don't think Borderlands 3 will be much a part of the conversation.
For me with Game Awards,
it should be. It's a good
for
game.
Me with Game Awards, I was in, obviously, I'm a big fan of Borderlands. I was happy to see it end up where I thought it should end up. Game of the year, no. It's just more Borderlands, which is great.
But
what
about
that,
like
obviously.
In specific shooter categories?
Well, that's the point.
Like
it got
okay.
it's got a nom for best action adventure game, and then it also got a nomination for best multiplayer game.
Okay,
which is both where I'd be like, yeah, exactly. If we're talking about and like because action adventure, and that's the weird thing is we talked about this yesterday where I thought best action game was supposed to be more shootery, but I guess since it is opening things and running quests, it's more of an action adventure. I don't care. As long as it's nominated in one of those categories, great. And then multiplayer game for sure, I think, with the way they do scaling, the way they do instance loot, the way they do all this different stuff. Because you're like, I have to catch up. You don't.
Right.
You jump into me and you jump into my game.
I just want to like get to that. You know, you there's always that sense of whenever you're playing a game where people have levels.
Yeah.
And if you're a lower level, you always feel like a little bit inferior until you feel like you're on the same perch as everybody else.
Yeah.
And I haven't played for a while, so I'm inevitably going
to
be behind.
Yeah, I'm
but
stoked
really
to get back
it.
To it, yeah.
Like, the one thing I really remember feeling good is, like, just the guns feel really good. Mm-hmm. Like, when you, like, everything blows up real good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, good jibs. The guns feel good in the hand. You know, just the rumble. Like, everything feels right.
And you don't forget, Gary, sometime before the end of the year, coming to Stadia. So there you go. You could start all fresh and just have it streaming wherever you go, you know?
Stadia is, like, this amazing time machine, isn't it, where you can play all the best games from a year ago. It's really remarkable.
Number two on the Roper Report, Half-Life Alyx is apparently set between Half-Life 1 and 2. This is Matt Kim over at IGN. Valve Software officially announced Half-Life Alyx, a new Half-Life VR game, and the first Half-Life title in 12 years. Valve says it will fully reveal details of the game later this week, which is actually Thursday, tomorrow. But new details have already emerged about its possible gameplay mechanics and setting. Ars Technica published a report with new details about Half-Life Alyx. According to their sources, Half-Life Alyx will be a prequel that takes place between Half-Life 1 and Half-Life 2. As the title implies, Half-Life Alyx will put players literally in the shoes of Alyx Vance, Gordon Freeman's partner introduced in Half-Life 2. One of the core mechanics from Half-Life 2, the physics-based gravity gun, will make a return in Half-Life Alyx, sort of. Instead of a gun, there will be a new mechanic called gravity gloves, which sources describe as something similar to magnet gloves. Like the gravity gun, the gravity gloves will allow players to attract faraway objects and interact with in-game objects that behave accordingly to realistic physics. Valve is reportedly interested in showing off the power of its Valve Index Knuckles controller with Half-Life Alyx. A lot of effort has been put into making almost every in-game object interactive and behave realistically. However, Ars is reporting that attempts to put another iconic Half-Life weapon in the game, the crowbar, have been less successful. Do you give a flying fuck about this game?
Yeah, I really do. I have very, very passionate and very mixed feelings about this news.
Lay it on me. Why?
Well, I mean, I'm old. I'm of a certain age. I'm of a certain generation. I'm old enough to remember when the very first Half-Life demo came into the PC Gamer office back in what would have been like 97, 98, something like that.
Yeah.
And we were just all absolutely blown away by it. Like, we'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And it is genuinely one of like the great, you know, historic milestones in PC gaming and gaming as a whole. Half-Life is like one of the all-time Hall of Fame games.
Sure.
And again, I'm old enough. I was there when it happens. Like, oh my God, what is this thing, Half-Life, the first time? And then
what
Half-Life,
about it? What about it? Like, blew you all away?
I think, you know, I mean, just from the very, very beginning, of that game, their very first impression that it makes is really, you take it for granted now, because all games kind of start this way because Half-Life changed it.
Yeah.
But when you played shooters prior to that, were things like Doom and Quake and Duke Nukem, right?
Yeah.
And the game started, you just dropped you into a room and shit started shooting out and you started shooting back. And that was just it. It just threw you into the melee. Whereas Half-Life started you off in this much more kind of like, well, I'm on a train, like I'm on this monorail, where am I going? Like, it started you off in story and it immersed you into the world. And it was a good, like, 15, 20 minutes into the demo before, like, the inciting incident happened where, you know, the accelerator or whatever collapses,
yeah,
and all the shit starts coming through and you've got to pick up a crowbar. And it just it was the first game to really kind of, like, set the scene and immerse you in the world and surround you with story and atmosphere and give you the feeling of living in a world before the game really got underway.
Gotcha.
And that was, we had never seen anything like, again, you take it for granted now. Or Call of Duty, all these games do it now. They all start you off like in a story.
Sure, you start
track before.
It's a normal day before everything goes out.
It's 5 or 10 minutes before like you're actually given a gun in a lot of these games.
Yeah.
But Half-Life started all of that. And Half-Life 2 took it to the next level. It was absolutely incredible. The episodes have been incredible. It's interesting because I think now, because it has been 12 years, so there's a whole generation of gamers have grown up for whom Half-Life is not really a thing that
right.
they remember or respond to. Older gamers like me are super excited about this. And like, you know, there's a reason why Half-Life 3 has been this, you know, golden goose for this.
Everybody's
for the longest. Like, oh my God,
why
are they not doing it? Like, it's the number one thing. This is, so just in the course of that one tweet, the Valve dropped, what was it, yesterday?
2 days ago.
Two days ago. It was a real emotional roller coaster. It was like a new Half-Life, Valve says, a new Half-Life game is coming. It was, oh my God. And it's in VR and people are going to go, oh, right?
Yeah.
Because VR, in a way, it wasn't that surprising. I've been asking myself this for a while. Look, Half-Life is Valve's most, arguably, I mean, there's Portal and other stuff, but I would say Half-Life is the cornerstone of Valve's creative brand. Gordon Freeman and Half-Life is the biggest thing. Everybody wants, like, if you ask anyone, like, what Valve franchise would you like to see come back for a new installment, I'm pretty sure almost everyone would say Half-Life.
Yeah. Except all these Dota nerds, right?
That's true. Again, that's the younger generation. But all the real gamers, all the oldies
like me,
we all know what's up. And VR, obviously, is incredibly important to Valve as well. So it always made sense to me that like the next Half-Life game would probably be in VR. Because if they really want to leverage VR, if they want people to... Like, Danny O'Dwyer and I were talking about this yesterday. Like, he was saying, I can't believe I'm going to have to fucking drag all my Vive stuff back out again. Because a new Half-Life game is the one game that's going to make you do that. If you want to force people to pay attention to VR and think, well, shit, maybe I better give it a try, fucking Half-Life game is the way to do it. So from a business point of view, it makes a lot of sense for Valve to leverage their most potent piece of IP to help, you know, boost something they're really trying to get off the ground, which is VR, and that's been slow to get off the ground. So it makes total sense to put those two things together. One hand helps the other. At the same time, and it's entirely possible that come tomorrow, they will show something in VR that's absolutely going to blow us away. I get it with the gloves because they want to use the hand controllers. All makes sense. And the idea of like VR in a Half-Life world, again, I mean, I've got all the VR stuff. Like, I'll definitely try. I'm definitely in. But I think there were many of us that just wanted a straight up new Half-Life game that doesn't necessitate VR, which not everyone is yet fully comfortable with. Like VR can be great, but I don't want to have to put the goggles. You don't want to spend long periods inside the goggles. VR's still got a lot of holdbacks and problems.
Sure.
So a lot of us just wanted a good old fashioned game on a TV screen or a PC monitor.
Do you expect? There's two different things here where I think Half-Life 3 has been so long gestating, at least in the minds of fans, right? Is there no way that could ever live up to the hype? So then, and then the second question to that, even in their related, would be, putting it into VR, do you think they have a shot to drag you back mentally to 1997 when you're playing this VR?
Yeah,
I can't believe they're doing this.
I won't bet against Valve. I think that, you know, if Valve is putting out a new Half-Life project in any medium, then you've got to pay attention to it. I mean, I definitely want to see what's up here. Is this the Half-Life story I would want to see next? No. I think Alex is a great character. I liked her a lot in Half-Life 2 and in the episodes. But they, you know, the last Half-Life game literally ended on a massive cliffhanger. Half-Life Episode 2 ended on a massive cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. And they've never, you know, we still haven't seen, there's no sign that there's ever going to be Episode 3. So instead of, let's imagine this. George Lucas put out Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back. And everyone's desperately waiting now for Return of the Jedi because the Empire ended on a whole new cliffhanger.
Yeah.
And 3 years later, when we're all expecting something like Return of the Jedi, like Chapter 3 to finish the story, George says, oh, you're not going to get that. I'm going to do some weird song. I'm going to do a Watto story.
I know. God, you just sold me on it.
And you would love it. But people would be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I want to know what happens in the end of the story you've been telling for all these years.
Yeah.
That's what we care about. Why are you telling me about fucking Watto?
Because everybody loves Watto. You know what I mean? I knew the disrespect today.
I knew that was a bad example.
There's like two dozen hashtags for characters, like Han Solo, Princess Leia, all this stuff. And they all have their own little emoji. Put Watto in, nothing. No Watto emoji. Come on.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. You're right. It's a missed opportunity. Thought Disney wanted to make money.
I guess I would have preferred Episode 3, or I would have preferred just straight up Half-Life 3, which would have functioned as Episode 3 as well, like continuing that story that we all want to see, the Gordon Freeman story.
Yeah.
At the same time, look, it's a new Half-Life game from Valve. Ultimately that is super exciting. Whatever it is, let's all, you know, be excited about
it. Does this one end in some kind of PT Silent Hills way, you think, where it's like it's like setting you up of what? And I understand it's a prequel between 1 and 2,
look,
but it's somehow like, hey,
I think this is a side project. I don't think anyone should be expecting anything the size of a full on Half-Life game or even one of the episodes, which were shorter experiences, because one of the things we know about VR is right now, at least, shorter experiences are preferable. People don't want to spend hours and hours inside the glasses. There's a reason why we don't have like World of Warcraft VR yet and things like that. A, because we're not quite there yet with the technology, but also because we haven't figured out how to make people comfortable staying inside the headset for that long. Because sooner or later, you just want to take the fucking thing off. 15, 20, 30 minutes is great. But after that, you're like, you just want to take
a
break.
That's you, old man. I did 4 hours of Resident Evil once.
Oh my
I was
God,
great.
I couldn't do it. Living in that house.
So
my guess is this is going to be a shorter experience. Kind of maybe like a Vader Immortal kind of thing. Maybe more to it than that. But I don't think this is going to be a fully fledged, full-on Half-Life game. I think it's going to be a great Half-Life experience. Mm-hmm. And again, it's Half-Life. Half-Life, don't forget, 12 years is a long time. Go back to Episode 2, the last thing that they made. It still looks good, but you can tell it's a way older game. Like, just seeing, like, the Half-Life world brought back with what is possible today.
Yeah.
With high NPCs. I'm fucking all in. I can't wait to see it.
I
would be excited if there was a non-VR option made available at some point, which maybe down the road they will. But right now, I can see what they're doing. They're using their most valuable brand to try and give a lift to something that really needs a lift,
headset,
which is their
VR
stuff. Yeah.
A nanobiologist writes in, confirming what you're saying, the Half-Life 1 demo was circulating in 1997 with the final release on November 19th, 1998 on PC.
There you go.
Number 3. Bobby Kotick thinks his politics shouldn't be in games. This is James Batchelor over at GamesIndustry.biz. I actually had to talk to Gary about this one beforehand because the headline getting tossed around I see a lot on Twitter is the headline of Bobby Kotick doesn't think politics should be in games.
That's what I saw.
Exactly. And then you read this article and it's not what he's saying. So it was this thing of, well, what do we do? And we just decided to read it and talk to you.
Surely the media didn't twist the narrative to suit its own clickbaity ends, Greg.
I don't even know if it's the media as much as people glancing at the headline and tweeting about it. The chief executive of Activision Blizzard has said video games are no place for political views or, more specifically, his. Bobby Kotick appeared on stage at the CNBC Evolve conference earlier this week for an on-stage interview where he was asked about everything from his rise as CEO to the future growth of video games. Toward the end of the interview, the interviewer asked Kotick's thoughts on the fact that so many CEOs are being asked or expected to lead the conversation on political issues. Quote, from Hong Kong and democracy to gaming addictions and beyond, since politicians are more reluctant to comment. Kotick said the company's ability to gather large audiences around entertainment products through which you can communicate make it comparable to Facebook, but emphasized that Activision is focused purely on video games. Quote, we are not the operator of the world's town halls, he said. We are the operator of the communities that allow you to have fun through the lens of a video game. My responsibility is to make sure that our communities feel safe, secure, comfortable, and satisfied and entertained. That doesn't convey to me the right to have a platform for a lot of political views, I don't think. I think my responsibility is to satisfy our audience and our stakeholders, our employees, our shareholders. But I think there are some business people who are incredible examples of character and integrity in principle and have what you see are the great attributes of leadership. And I think that they are incredibly inspiring for me. But I think, you know, they do have the right to articulate views and visions and voices about government and policy and politics, and I love engaging with those people. Kotick did not address the specific example of Hong Kong given by the interviewer, despite the controversy the subject caused Activision Blizzard last month. Gary, this is the right stance, right?
Well, I mean, kinda. I mean, it feels a bit word salad-y to me.
Of course.
You know, like, he's honest in that he says, when the most honest thing he says here, and the most direct thing he says is, I think my responsibility is to satisfy our audience and our stakeholders, our employees, our shareholders. As yeah. I always say, at the end of the day, companies like Activision are not patrons of the arts. They exist to increase shareholder value.
Yeah.
And if he can do that by steering clear of politics and not doing anything too, you know, controversial, then he's going to do that. It's not a morally... Activision is not... Oh, this is true generally of all major. They're not morally led companies. They are led by financial incentives. That's
sure.
all. And you know, if it's economically sensible for them to also have like a moral dimension, all these companies have their bullshit. Like, oh, we give back charity stuff. Like Amazon has its bullshit charity effort where they give about as much to charity every year as they actually make every 5 minutes. I mean, it's ridiculous.
They don't pay taxes.
But they get to say, "Ooh, look at you know," because they don't pay taxes. But again, I digress. Look. Should the bigger question? I get what you're saying about how the media narrative has taken this the wrong way a little bit. He is kind of saying that he's saying here a little bit like, you know, we want our communities to feel safe, secure, comfortable, and satisfied and entertained. Which basically it kind of sounds like to me like don't challenge them or give them anything that they might find that might make them uncomfortable. And I would argue that video games are a form of art, and all art in some way or form is about challenging your preconceived notions and making you feel uncomfortable and taking you out of your comfort zone. Some art is merely about entertaining you and having fun. Is Luigi's Mansion 3 political? No. Should it be? No, I mean, like, no, it's just a fun time.
Sure.
But specifically, let's talk about Activision. What's their number one franchise? Modern Warfare.
Call of Duty. Yeah.
You cannot make, and you can. I've just been playing the latest game, and it's great. The story campaign's really good. And part of the reason why it is good is it seems like they've at least tried to frame it in the political context of, you know, what real-world conflict looks like. You can't make a game about Russian terrorism and ultranationalism and Middle Eastern conflicts and how, you know, the Western nations deal with it and not have that touch on politics. That's exactly what the story is about. And if you don't do that, you're doing the subject matter and your audience a massive disservice. So it's kind of, it's weird for, in a way, for Bobby Kotick to be saying, I don't think our games should be political, when their number one selling game, and arguably their only real selling game, I mean, literally, what the fuck else has Activision even put out these days?
Well, Activision Blizzard, I mean.
Blizzard, to set Blizzard aside, what does sure. Activision put out?
What's that rate?
Apart from their annual Call of Duty games. Fucking Spyro the Dragon?
Yeah, they're doing some Spyro out there.
So,
yeah.
Aside from, it's weird when they make all their money from games that are inherently political. And I actually think that their most recent, well, it does a good job of not rubbing your nose in it, but it does, in a kind of popcorny Tom Clancy way, It's talking about the way the world is. And
have you played through it?
Not all the way. I'm about like halfway through
okay.
it. But it's
yeah. You have the guerrilla fighters.
It's obviously a game that has a political theme, and it should have. You can't talk about modern warfare and modern combat and the way that nations
sure.
you know interact with each other militarily and stuff like that and terrorism and how, of course that's political. So for him to say that it's not in some way, I think, is a
bit
of a
deflection. But here's my thing is, again, I still feel like, don't get me wrong, there's 100,000 reasons, right, to sit there and fucking tell you why Activision Blizzard suck, why Bobby Kotick's made bad decisions, yada, yada, yada. I still feel like the question is leading. And granted, I haven't watched the entire clip, right? But they're talking specifically about asking him about his role. And even right. what he's saying here, my responsibility, right? That doesn't convey to me the right to have a platform for a lot of political views. I don't think it's my responsibility. I think it seems more like...
If that's what he's saying... Then I agree with that. As a CEO of the company, he should not be using this massive platform as a way to advance his own political views. But if the through the organic, genuine creative development process that happens with the teams, if they feel like in their next game they want to address political topics or themes, right, in their modern warfare game, which is inherently political to begin with,
right,
then they should have the freedom to do that wherever their own creative political instincts and impulses take them. But yeah, he's right to say that that should not be
his
dictated
role
by Bobby Kotick. Absolutely, yeah. Of course not.
That's what I was taking this from. Don't get me wrong. And then I've seen so many interesting takes on Twitter, right, that are about the games they are making and how political Modern Warfare is, in the way that, like we've talked about before with that Death Highway, right, where it was taking a real example of Death Highway but fudging the facts in this fictional universe to make it that the people who were committing the war crime weren't Americans.
Right.
You know, we were on the right side of that conflict. Like, I get that all together, and I get this. I just feel like I saw so many pitchforks go up when I'm like, I don't know if that's exactly what he's saying this time around, that game shouldn't be political. And again, it's Activision Blizzard, right? The whole Hong Kong disaster we've seen here and the way they've handled that. This Death Road stuff from Modern Warfare. I'm not saying clearly this is fine. Everything's fine. I'm just saying in this one example, I thought it was an interesting read that people were taking away.
Kind of surprised that the interviewer didn't press him on that. It says Kotick did not address the specific example of Hong Kong. You can only assume it's because he wasn't asked.
They put it out there right in the top, and then that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number four. More usual video game news for you. Pokemon Sword and Shield is coming to Smash, at least in Japan. This is Chris Priestman over at IGN. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate is hosting a Pokemon Sword and Shield event on November 22nd that will feature new Pokemon, including the three brand new starters. Nintendo Japan announced it on Twitter that a Pokemon Sword and Pokemon Shield event for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate will start on November 22nd and run for 5 days. The event brings Pokemon from the Galar region to the platform fighter in the form of spirits. There will be four new spirits available during the duration of the event. It's not yet clear whether the event will be exclusive to Japan players or will be available in other regions too. I would predict it's available in other regions too. Has your daughter jumped in?
We've both been playing it. We got the double pack. She's been playing Sword and I've been playing Shield.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I thought was quite impressive, I guess because we're on the same Wi-Fi network or something, but like we were both just playing our own individual games, mm-hmm, and we happened to be in the same area, and we bumped into each other. Like, the game actually connected
us. Yeah, I've heard about
without
this.
Without even asking that we didn't, like, have to link up or go into co-op mode. It's just like, oh, I bumped into this character. And my daughter was like, I bumped into this character as well. It's like, wait, that's each other. We're talking to each
other.
That's cute. And it just kind of organically happened, and that was really cool. I'm maining Score Bunny.
Yeah?
I'm a Score Bunny.
I'm starting on my flight to London tomorrow, so I'm excited. Well, I like it, you think? I've never really gotten into a Pokemon.
Yeah, it's very easy and accessible. It holds your hand a lot. You don't, you know, you'll it's
okay.
Not a difficult game.
I wasn't worried about the difficulty. I was just wondering if I
enjoy
it.
Will you enjoy it? Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Number five, sad news. An EverQuest developer has passed away. This is James Batchelor at GamesIndustry.biz. Brad McQuaid has died at the age of 51. He was best known for his work as the original producer and co-designer of pioneering MMO EverQuest, as well as contributions to its sequel and other MMOs such as PlanetSide and Star Wars Galaxies. The news was announced by his team at Visionary Realms, which is continuing work on his latest title, Pantheon, who said he passed away in his home last night. Via the official Pantheon Twitter account, the studio wrote, quote, "He will be deeply missed and forever remembered by gamers worldwide. Thank you for bringing us through your worlds. Rest in peace," end quote. On the Pantheon forums, Director of Communications Benjamin Dean added, "Brad was a visionary, a mentor, an artist, a trailblazer, a friend, I screwed it up again, a husband, a father. He touched thousands of lives with his dreams and concepts. He changed the landscape of video games forever. He will be deeply missed and forever remembered in life and in Pantheon. All of us at Visionary Realms offer our deepest condolences to Brad's family, and during this most difficult time, we kindly ask that you respect the privacy of Brad's family," end quote. Throughout a career of more than 30 years, McQuaid worked at a number of prominent MMO developers, including Sony Online Entertainment, Sigil Games Online, and eventually Visionary Realms. Sad news. We wish his family all the best and all of his friends, obviously.
I expect we might be seeing a few. You know, it's nice and it's nice in a way when you're able to leave something behind. Like, we're all mortal. We're all going to be gone sooner or later, but we all like to think that we'll leave something behind that we can be remembered by. You know, I know fucking the movies that I've made. You've got Shirtless Spider-Man. Like, we've all got things that will echo throughout history.
Yeah.
Long after we're gone. He made an entire world. Like, EverQuest is still, the original EverQuest is still going. And I fully expect that you will see a lot of people coming together in EverQuest to do little kind of tributes and events.
Oh yeah,
and
for sure,
like that.
For sure. Yeah, as it should be. Number six on the Roper Report and final for the day. Former directors of Arkane Studios have announced a new independent game studio. Kevin, this is the one with the asset. 20 years after the creation of Arkane Studios, former president and creative director Raphael Colatino and former executive producer Julian Robbie announced Wolfeye Studios. As a fully distributed team, Wolfeye Studio aims to create games in which players live their own adventures in rich simulated worlds that respond to actions and decisions in ways that are unique to each playthrough. Today, the studio released a teaser image for its first title, which will be announced at the Game Awards in December. You see it right there. Ooh, Wolfeye Studios thing. If you can't see it, cool color scheme. Looked comic booky. Dude with the staff. Some kind of weird.
What's that on
head
his back?
Or backpack. I can't tell if it's a backpack or if it is a head. Looks like it might actually be a head.
Maybe it's a statue head?
Maybe it's a statue head. Maybe it's a skull. Something like that. Yeah. Colatino's nearly 20-year-long career as the founder and creative director at Arkane Studios paved the way for some of the game industry's most revered and groundbreaking titles. Robbie has been a deep bench of experience in the industry as well, having produced some legendary titles like Dishonored and Arx Fatalis. I've never heard of that one. Do you know
Arx Fatalis?
You know that one?
Yeah.
What was it? Just is that an old PC game?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And having worked alongside Colatino for more than 12 years, after departing from Arkane, the duo spent time away from any one particular project before coming back together to form Wolfeye. Quote, after taking some time off and consulting for a variety of video game companies, I'm ready for a new adventure, added Colatino, president and creative director at Wolfeye. The AAA market is risk-averse, and innovation suffers from it. As a game designer, I've been wanting to try new ideas and approaches, and I believe independent games are the best space to do so, end quote. Another quote then starts. This is an incredible opportunity to work together again with Raph, being able to build the kind of unique and deep games we love to play, said Robbie, CEO and executive producer at Wolfeye. The decision to work as a distributed team around the world has meant we're able to find some of the best talents in the industry to help craft our vision.
All
exciting, right?
Right?
If you're if you're a fan of Arkane's work, if you like that Dishonored, if you like that Prey stuff, that's some good stuff for you. Some good news for you. And I especially am interested and excited that they're doing the announcement that it'll already be at the Game Awards.
Yeah, and I like that they're moving away from AAA and doing something smaller.
Right.
Because I agree that, you know, the more money you spend and the more AAA you get, the more kind of straight down the middle you've got to go.
Exactly.
And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, just like in films, indie films get to take more risks and be more experimental because there's less money on the line. Same is true with games.
Totally, 100%. Excited to see what they show at Game Awards. Excited to see where it goes. But Gary, the Game Awards are still so far away.
Classic Greg Wise.
I want it. Something more immediate. Say what came to the mom and grop shops. Where would I go?
Oh, fuck, it's not here. Oh, there it is.
Just, you didn't see, I skipped the question.
Yeah.
You gotta laugh through the pain of Kevin leaving.
You'd think by now I'd be off book on this. You think I would just know it, right?
Yeah.
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah.
What's out? What's out there?
Out today. Still there. Switch and PC. Children of Morta. Switch. Bouncy Bob 2 on Switch. Pixels Can Fight on PC, Golf Around on PC, Adam, Robot World on PC, Unlock the King on PC and Mac, Forgotten Hill Disillusion, PC, Ebony, PC, Uncharted Ocean, PC, Linked Mask, PC, Hermes, Rescue Mission, PC, Hexadrift, PC and Mac.
If you had to take one of these games with you on your plane to London, just purely based on the title, what would you take? And it's the only game you get to play, and you have no information other than the title.
Because
right. I'm pretty sure you don't know anything about any of these games.
Right? No. You kidding me? They're
what would you take?
PC dork games. Oh, God.
It's not easy. It's not I don't know easy what I would take.
I guess I would say Forgotten Hill Disillusion.
What do you think that is?
I have no idea. Something, a horror game, maybe? Kevin, can I see what Forgotten Hill Disillusion is?
Can we have a look at that one,
on
Kevin?
Yeah, give me 2 seconds.
No problem. No rush. What would you take?
I don't know. I mean, none of the...
It was either going to be that or Still There, because it's on Switch.
I feel like...
I see Bouncy Bob 2.
Maybe Hermes Rescue Mission? I don't know what that is. Sounds like it could be like a Mars, like a space kind of thing. I don't know. None of them sound super exciting.
Here we go. Here's Forgotten Hill.
Okay, here's Forgotten Hill.
Oh, no, I can already tell.
Forgotten Hill. Okay, here we go.
Oh, no. I don't know if I like
what
my
did
choice.
You pick? What
it's
did
a horror
pick?
Game, so I got that right. Oh, you know what? Hold on. Is it a visual novel or is it a
puzzles?
I got some gears. I got some puzzles.
Puzzles.
All right. Okay, I got to send things across. Okay. All right, you know what? I'm going through this weird...
So it looks like a haunted house
puzzle
game?
Yeah, I'm trying to get through this scary...
It's making me uncomfortable.
Kevin, you love squids.
No.
Okay,
this is the kind of thing.
This would keep me entertained. It would keep me.
But it does have puzzles.
I don't want to go out there. There's so many puzzles. I'd be definitely going to be. It's one of those I'd be noodle scratcher. You know,
Leah
what I mean?
Would like this, but this is the kind of game that would drive me nuts.
Gun Hill Disillusion, coming. Oh, it's on the App Store too. Interesting.
I'm going to go with. Can you pull Bouncy Bob 2?
Oh God,
Kevin, because I feel like I just want. I don't want to take any risks. I want to take something that feels like it's going to be fun.
Sure. And Bouncy Bob 2 on Switch.
All right, let's see. No, Bouncy Bob 2 Nintendo Switch gameplay.
It's got some colors.
All right, here we go. Simple controls, attack and jump. Sure. I like that.
Here we go. And
let's go.
Level select.
Come on, Bouncy Bob. What do we got here? All right, so it's a platformer?
But it looks like...
It looks like it's a twin stick, but you're bouncing off of everything you touch, so you have to like spin the stick on where you're going to go.
I feel like I made a bad choice here.
It does
it's
look
got
like
a weird mechanic to it.
It's definitely look. That's another player, right? So you're fighting against. You could play with your daughter.
I'm gonna jump forward more.
Oh, there's CPU.
No, that's it's a CPU.
The couch covered it. Sorry. There's player two. You can play this with people. I mean, you
maybe
get what you get.
Maybe. All right.
PUBG update 5.2 is also available on PC right now with the spike trap, of the candy updates, and more. New dates for you. Scriptum VR, the neighbor's house escape room. Coming to Steam on December 3rd. Soul Calibur 6 is getting some, a season pass number 2 in its armor set C. It's got some Hildy's Arrival. That's coming November 26th. Neverwinter's next major update. Infernal Descent is going to launch on PC on January 21st, 2020. Consoles, a later date.
Is that a big deal, the new Soul Calibur coming out?
I couldn't tell you. The fighting game people, man. They're
who knows?
They're their own group. What they're into,
I just remember like, I have very happy memories of Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast 20 years ago.
And then Snack World, the Dungeon Crawl Gold, is coming to that Nintendo Switch on February 14th, 2020. The perfect Valentine's Day gift. Deal of the day for you. Over at Twinfinite, I saw Alex Gibson putting up a Ubisoft sale thing. Ubisoft today launched its Black Friday game sale, discounting several of its major AAA games substantially. A video trailer published today spotlights what's on offer. Here's what caught our eye. Assassin's Creed Odyssey for 60% off, Division 2 for 70% off, Rainbow Six Siege for 60% off, For Honor 67% off. Notably, Ghost Recon Breakpoint, which only launched 4 weeks ago, is discounted by a whopping 50%.
With Black Friday sales, we're already starting early this year. Early every year.
Deals of the day is good for like the little stuff here and there, but then when everybody has it, like IGN is covered in Black Friday sales where you can get, you can get the DualShock cheaper, you can get something for Switch cheaper. Like it's all over there. If you're looking for a video game deal, get out there. AirPods cheaper for like $15.
You should do like a Black Friday special show where you round up all your favorite deals.
Everybody does that.
Do they do that?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, every .com. I mean, IGN like thrives on that. Right. Just go to IGN. Don't worry about it.
Right. I do like to find bargains.
I know you do.
I like a bargain.
Yeah. You're eating Denny's all the time.
The cheaper, the better. Yeah. I had those new Christmas Elf on the Shelf pancakes at IHOP the other day.
How are they?
They're pancakes, but they're green.
Okay.
You know, they're festive pancakes. Yeah. All right. I was pretty happy with it.
It's time for reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Third Love. Nearly all the kind of honeys, and that means our significant others, not every female in all of Kind of Funny, are wearing and using Third Love bras, and it's time to find out why. The first reason, a perfect fit. Third Love uses data points generated by millions of women who have taken their Fit Finder quiz to design bras with breast size and shape in mind for a perfect fit and premium feel. Second reason, more sizes than other brands. Third Love offers more than 80 sizes, including their signature half-cup sizes. And finally, convenience. You can skip the trip and find your fit with Third Love's online fit finder, order, and try on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. Every customer has 60 days to wear it, wash it, and put it to the test. And if you don't love it, return it. And Third Love will wash it and donate it to a woman in need. Third Love's team of expert fit stylists are dedicated to helping you find the perfect fit, and they're available every day to help via text, chat, or phone. Returns and exchanges are easy and free as well. Third Love donates all their gently used return bras to women in need, supporting charities in their local San Francisco Bay Area and across the United States. So far, they've donated more than $15 million in bras. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they are offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games for 15% off today. Up next is Quip. I love using my Quip. I'm excited to go to London, put it in. I got to actually change the top because they send you the new Quip brush every 3 months on the dentist recommended schedule. I got to change that before I pack tonight. But I put the little handle over it, the cover in it, I'm ready to go. Quip, makers of the Quip electric toothbrush, want you to know that there's one single discovery that matters most to your dental care. It is simply this, that if you have good habits, you are good. That means brushing for 2 minutes twice a day and flossing regularly, no matter what brand you use. Quip makes that simple, starting with an electric toothbrush, refillable floss, and anti-cavity toothbrush. Quip's electric toothbrush has sensitive sonic vibrations with a built-in timer and 30-second pulses to guide for a full and even clean. The Quip floss dispensers come with pre-marked string to help you use just enough. Plus, Quip delivers fresh brush heads, floss, and toothpaste refills to your door every 3 months with free shipping, so your routine is always right. Join over 3 million healthy mouths and get Quip today, starting at just $25. And if you go to getquip.com/games right now, you'll get your first refill free. That's your first refill free at getquip.com/games. GETQUIP.com/games. Quip, the good habits company. And finally, it's Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy and getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully, now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. You've heard me talk about it before. Moved here, got a loan, the interest rate sucked because they didn't take any of the things that Upstart takes into account. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you and understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in under a minute. You get in there. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards and meet their financial goals. You should too. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with more than 300 businesses on Trustpilot. And hurry to upstart.com/KFGames to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate takes only a few minutes. It won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/KFGames. Gary, where do I want to start with you?
What do you got?
Kevin Gary's on the show.
He is indeed.
There it is. Thanks. No, it's fine. I understand.
Wow.
I'm not going to even say it. This is a Cats rebuttal. I'm not going to say anything about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure I really wanted to get into this Cats war with Kevin because he's the man behind the curtain and, there with and the levers now, and the buttons. He can do all kinds of things to me.
I'm worried about everything. I'm worried about you guys. I want to see you guys.
Kevin, I just want to check in. I know pressure, but like, have you had a chance to think about what we talked about?
Well, let's talk about after.
All right. Okay.
Let's talk about after.
Just as long as you've given it some.
I'm definitely. I hope you at least would have. I thought about it a lot.
Giving it some real consideration.
But I started to think about it yesterday.
Just think about my feelings. Is all I'm asking.
And they're very important to me.
Okay. All right.
You know, I want you to know that.
I do have. I know. I come across as. Brash and acerbic, and I give out a lot
of
grief to people, but I am human. I do have feelings.
Prick
me, do I not?
Suck sandwich writes in to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Suck sandwich. Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames and says, now that we've seen the Game Award nominees for 2019, I have one question. Will Nintendo games ever be taken seriously enough to win Game of the Year? Putting Breath of the Wild and Super Smash Bros. Aside, we hardly see Nintendo titles in the same conversations when it comes to awards and Game of the Year contenders. It's always, quote, what's the best Nintendo game? And then, what's the best out of the rest of this year's releases? They're hardly ever one and the same. I feel like Nintendo games are too often criticized for what they aren't rather than what they are. Obviously, there's merit in looking at all games as a whole, but I feel comparing something like Luigi's Mansion 3 to something like Death Stranding is comparing apples to oranges. They both have their own strengths and merits. They're just different. Is this fair? Should reviewers and critics be more inclusive when deciding the year's best-ofs? Or is Nintendo doomed to mostly sit on the sidelines while other AAA releases hog the limelight? Suck sandwich. I disagree on a lot of stuff here. First off, they're not ignored. You bring out, without, you know, Breath of the Wild and Smash.
Breath of the Wild sweep the board last 2 years ago?
Yeah, right? and that year I was
an
like...
An Odyssey, right?
I was like, I liked Odyssey more for Game of the Year than I liked
Yeah, it was really Nintendo versus Nintendo. They were only the only two serious contenders for Game of the Year 2 years ago, if I'm getting it right, were Breath of the Wild
Yeah, because last year it was God of War and Red Dead.
And everything else was like best of the rest.
Exactly. And so I think, like... let's admit that like Nintendo gets its fair share in there, right? And even when people were like all high on Skyward Sword, like a bunch of dum dums that, you know, they like that one a lot. They thought that.
Yeah, I don't understand when he says we hardly see Nintendo titles in the same conversation when it comes to awards. And just 2 years ago, they dominated the awards. They had by far and away the two best games.
But
of the year.
Let's throw that out. That's a bunch of bullshit. But tossing it in here.
Sorry, like, suck sandwich.
No. Well, I mean, I feel like comparing something like Luigi's Mansion 3 to Death Stranding is comparing apples and oranges. Well. Yes, but that's welcome to reviewing and talking about video games. You have to sit there and talk about. I love Luigi's Mansion. I know you love Luigi's Mansion.
I love it.
I don't think Luigi's Mansion is game of the year.
I think it probably isn't either. And I say that having not played everything yet. There's still a couple of games I need to catch up on. But I do. If I had to make a short list, it would be on that list. Luigi's Mansion 3 is fucking great.
Yeah,
it is a little mini masterpiece of game design and craft. And artistry. It's beautiful all the way through. It's fiendishly well designed. It's ingeniously well designed. The whole family.
Except for that one fight with the inner tubes in the water with the spikes.
That was a bit. Well, it's the trick is to go. You've got to go into co-op. Some of the boss battles. You've got to go into co-op mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fine. The co-op mode's really, really cleverly well done. It's a great, great game. And I wonder if. To this question's point, it might be getting a little bit overlooked just because, not because it's a Nintendo game, but because people think of like Luigi's Mansion as like second string Nintendo. Like it's not Zelda, it's not true Mario. Luigi's Mansion is this little thing off to the side. Everyone who played it loved it, but I do think that there's a little bit.
But I love it in a different way. Like I love it. I love it in a different way than I love Star Wars, than I love Death Stranding in terms of like. What it's making me do and the cortex is it's lighting up in my brain. Luigi's Mansion, outside of that one boss battle, I never felt challenged in.
Yeah, I mean, they're very different games. In Luigi's Mansion, I'm battling ghosts, I'm solving puzzles, I'm fighting bosses, I'm doing cool co-op stuff with Luigi.
Get to the punchline, go ahead, I know where it's
going.
And
in Death Stranding, I'm trying not to fall over. So, you know, those are very different games. You know, one is a lot of fun. And the other one is, I don't know what the fuck it is. several hours in now to Death Stranding as I am in.
You ready to walk away?
I've got my dad visiting at the moment, and I had it on while he was like on the couch.
And
he sat down and he's like, oh, wow. He was like, wow, graphics are
beautiful,
really good
at
video games.
Yeah.
I said, oh, yeah, they've really come a long way. And he's watching for me. He said, like, so what's the deal with this game? Like, what are you doing? Like, and I was like, I have no fucking idea.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, right now I'm just trying not to fall over. It's basically the most expensive version of Quap. That's ever been made, right?
Yeah,
I don't. I'm gonna try playing it a little bit more, but right now it's not doing it for me. And I love Kojima, and I hope that he makes video games for the next 50 years and never stops because I love everything that he does. And Metal Gear Solid, and I love the fact that Death Stranding is something that got made. And Metal Gear Solid 2 is one of my all time favorite games, but I don't think Death Stranding is my cup of tea.
I understand.
It's too boring.
That's fine.
But Luigi's Mansion, I got to digress there. But
no, that's funny. Luigi's, as soon as you started,
Luigi's
like, oh,
Mansion 3, I would say Luigi's Mansion 3 and Borderlands 3 are probably the two games that I just had the most straight up fun playing this year. And that should count for something. I'm surprised Modern Warfare isn't. Again, Call of Duty, I think there's a Call of Duty tax. Like, oh, that's not cool. That's just a big juggernaut game. It can't seriously be the best game. And maybe it's not, but I would argue that it's in the 10 best games of the year. Maybe
sure,
even
but you're down
five.
To five, right?
Wait, what? Well, okay. So what's on the short list for this thing?
Game of the year?
Yeah.
Game of the year right now for the Game Awards is this. Control.
Legitimate.
Death Stranding. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. Resident Evil 2. Sekiro.
Okay, yeah, sure. But not my kind of game, but
The
I know
Outer
really
Worlds.
Good. Okay. I don't know. I feel like there's some big stuff missing there.
Yeah.
I think Luigi's Mansion should be on the list.
Uh-huh.
I haven't played Jedi yet, but I don't want to get into that. I know it missed the cutoff and there's this weird thing that happens.
That's a real bummer.
It's a total bummer.
Huge bummer. Yeah.
How do you have end of year? How do you have awards timed in such a way that there's a whole area like at the end of November where like some of the biggest games of the years are coming out, like Jedi, that can't be considered and now have to go into next year? Well, there's no way they're going to win next year because they're going to be considered like, oh, that's an old game. We want to talk about the new games. I think it's bullshit.
Well, hold on. Evan M writes into patreon.com.
Eminem wrote into
Patreon? No, Evan. Oh, Evan, okay. Evan M.
That would have been fucking
that
great.
That would have been insane. You kidding me? Marshall Mathers
Can you
writes
imagine?
In? Oh, my God.
I love that.
Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames says, EA/Respawn had every opportunity to release press copies for Star Wars before the Game Awards nomination deadline, but still chose to release press copies late. My question for discussion is this an indictment on what the Game Awards really mean to big AAA developers? That is, the Game Awards don't mean much to them. I believe that if EA/Respawn played ball with Jeff and the Game Awards, it would have been nominated in multiple categories, potentially even winning. But instead, it has missed the deadline, and while there is a chance it will appear in the 2020 Game Awards conversation, the hype around Star Wars will most certainly have cooled by then. Was this a mistake, or do these Game Awards accolades mean nothing to big developers? I think
they mean something to the developers. Developers love to win awards. I think EA probably doesn't care as much.
No, I would say EA cares maybe even more than certain devs, right? Like in terms of getting that out there, getting it on the box, doing the thing. Here's the thing.
But a Game of the Year award is not going to move the... A game like a big Star Wars game like that, which has already got fantastic reviews,
sure.
Being able to say, oh, Game of the Year... It's not. I don't think it's going to move that many more copies.
Ah, people love slapping that on their fucking trailers.
They
though, don't
do.
They?
It's a nice prestige thing to have. I just think it's unfortunate and weird to have your and I spoke to Jeff Keighley about this yesterday briefly.
Saw you on Twitter,
and he pointed out that different awards go from, you know, they all have a cutoff. They're at different times
right.
of the year. But if you're going to have a game, which is essentially as close to near as damn it the calendar year. Right, we all talk about Game of the Year in December because the year's over.
Right,
like we usually go by the calendar year.
Right,
and the Game Awards are effectively using the calendar year, and yet the cutoff is actually short of that. Right in that awkward window when some of the best games of the year or the biggest, most anticipated games of the year are coming out, and right now, and we've just seen that with Jedi falling between the cracks.
Yeah.
Could EA have rushed out some review code earlier? I don't know. Death Stranding gets in, which is a game that I would argue would take a lot longer for reviewers to get their teeth into and understand. That gets in, but a week later, Jedi doesn't, and now it has to wait.
But you have to understand
a whole other year to be considered.
Death Stranding. Remember, we had multiple weeks before the review embargo was the same cutoff as hey, get your nominations in, not even the cutoff of the actual thing.
Right.
The thing about it, and we've talked about this before on this show, so stick with me if I digress, is that. Evan starts with EA/Respawn had every opportunity to release press copies for Star Wars before the Game Awards nomination deadline. Did they? The joke, right, is like how broken in certain spots or how buggy Fallen Order is, right?
I just think. Look, I understand the commercial reasons why the Game Awards are where they are.
Yeah.
That the Game Awards are. It's a vehicle designed to. Essentially make money. It's all built, you know, Jeff decided. I don't think Jeff is great. He's a true believer. He's one of us. I think Jeff is great. And I think what he's trying to do with the Game Awards is very positive for games. Putting them on a big stage is as glamorous and glitzy as the Oscars or anything else. So that can be a great like storefront to the world for games and the games business. But by putting them by hosting them in mid-December, you create this artificial cutoff whereby some of the most worthy games of the year, because the biggest, most anticipated games of the year come out in that window, might fall through the cracks. And we've seen it happen just now with a game that is going to be on everyone else's Game of the Year list and will probably win a bunch of them, but is ineligible for this one because the way their cutoff works.
Yeah.
I just think it's something they should look at.
It sucks, but I feel like no matter what, where is that cutoff going to be? You're going to have somebody, right?
December 31st.
Yeah, well, then the Game Awards are in January.
Yeah.
But then too close to DICE and has a better host.
But then other people say, oh, there's no sponsorship dollars. That's fine. Just, you know, just be upfront about what this event is designed to do.
The point I was making before, I was rudely interrupted by somebody who loves cats too much. What I was saying is, did they have every opportunity? Because, I've gone through the dates with you guys before, but I also, on the other side, remember hitting them up that week being like, hey, are we going to get copies before the cutoff? And them saying, like, we're trying to get you copies for the day of the cutoff for nominations, that Friday. And on Friday, when they didn't make it, they sent out an email being like, hey, we're not going to be able to get everybody copies today, but we hope that what you saw in the preview event a couple weeks ago for 3 hours, what you played, is enough for you to understand the concept, where we're going, and what this game could be. I do not think, to Evan's question, they had every opportunity. I do not think they did. I think they were working on this down to the line. Nanobiologist points out Fallen Order went gold October 23rd. We all know that doesn't fucking mean anything.
So the system works in such a way that companies can expect to be nominated based on just having played, like, attended a few preview events?
As you can see with Fallen Order, no. When I got that email, I was like, I liked what I played at the preview, and I refused to nominate based on this.
Yeah, I mean, I would think like with any legitimate awards, like at the Oscars, for example, which I guess most people would consider to be the gold standard of awards in any medium.
Yeah,
you know, you fucking watch the film before you nominate it. You don't nominate it because the trailers looked good.
You're getting indignant. Like, it didn't happen. The system works. Like, everybody was like, no, we're not going to nominate that without playing it.
Right, but what I'm annoyed about is how the game came out in mid-November 2019,
yeah,
and it's not eligible for the 2019
Game Awards.
Yeah,
that's a different argument. Yeah, 100%.
That's my only argument.
No, I hear you. I agree.
I feel like they should tweak something. Again, honestly, the example I gave yesterday is if you look at, so for example, the Game Developers Choice Awards,
yeah,
which are given out in March for the previous year's games,
yeah,
that gives everyone, all the judges, ample time to play all the games thoroughly,
yeah,
think about it, reflect on it, and give a considered opinion. That's all decent. All decent awards, all meritorious awards, all legitimate awards have that buffer window between the cutoff and the actual judging, and there's no rush to get it done. You shouldn't have to be rushing stuff in to get it, you know, in there. You do see movies rushing to get into theaters before the end of the year so they can be considered for the next year's Oscars. But again, everyone understands that the year runs from January 1st to December 31st. That's easy for everyone to understand.
I hear you, and maybe they need to change it. Maybe they need to move dates. The other, thing from yesterday's award nominations, right, is the fact that we can sit here and say no one will nominate Star Wars. Smash Brothers didn't have a problem. Smash Brothers is in Game of the Year running right now, right? It is one of the Game of the
Year. Right, and that's the game that came out last December.
Exactly. So, I mean, and Grant, to Jeff's credit, I think, when he put out the email of like, here's where it's, you know, old hat for so many of us, but here's the categories, here's what it all means. This is the timeline for what, you know, or the window for what's here, meaning that he very much called out Smash and I think some other game of like, these games are nominable.
Yeah, where I got confused was there was an initial, Andrea put out an initial tweet that said, Jedi's not eligible and it's a real shame it won't be eligible next year either. No. That was later, Jeff later clarified that it will in fact be eligible next year. So it's not the apocalyptic scenario I first thought where there's a dead zone, which is also one of the most like biggest hot zones for big games to come out, like mid-November.
Yeah.
Where if you fall into that zone, you're not eligible for this year or next year. It will be eligible next year. I still think that puts it at a bit of a disadvantage, Smash Brothers notwithstanding. It's going to be up against, you know, games that are newer and fresher in everyone's minds. Again, this is why most big Oscar movies come out at the end of the year. They don't come out at the beginning of the year because they wanted to be fresh in Oscar voters' minds, not something they watched a year ago.
Here's my thing is I thought Jeff's response to you was even not less clear, but still not as much of a slam dunk of like, it's definitely, Jeff's response to you was very much like, if the judges want it, if the judges nominate it, then it's in, don't worry, right? But to me, it still is that thing of November 15th, the release of Jedi was the cutoff. So does that mean all games by 11:59 p.m. on the 14th? And then if it came out on the 15th, like, it's going to be, I think, because there's been such a hullabaloo and because I do think Jedi is going to get so many, IGN noms, GameSpot noms. It's going to be talked about in our Game of the Year discussion for sure. And it's going to win some of these awards. I think that going into Game Awards next year, he'll have to put in there like, hey, if you want to nominate.
If you're going to have Game Awards at the end of the year, give everything a chance. Give everything a proper chance to get in.
Yeah.
That's all.
Okay.
And again, Star Wars Jedi doesn't need my help. It looks like a great game, and it's going to sell a ton of copies.
It's a great game. It should sell a ton of copies. Squad up time, everybody. This is where one of you writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Give me your name, username, platform of choice, and why you need help in video games. I read it here. The best friends come and find you, and everybody plays games together. Today, Jeffrey P. Long needs help on Xbox One. His username on Xbox One is Jeffrey P. Long. Spaces in there. Hey guys, I need help on Gears 5. I still need to mop up some Tour of Duty medals for Versus mode. So if any of you guys feel like helping / carrying me through some Versus games, add me and let's play together. If you want to play Gears 5 with Jeffrey P. Long, hit him up on that there Xbox.
That's another one on my backlog. My backlog is embarrassing. Gears 5. I guess that's not being considered Game of the Year contender either, huh?
No, but it got nominated in there for like vocal performance and then I think the action game. It's time for You're Wrong. This is where people watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames tell us what we screwed up as we screw it up. They go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Rocket Guardian says Activision published Sekiro, which is technically a From Software game, and they are not owned by any company. When we were asking what else they've published.
Oh, right.
Arx Fatalis is an action role-playing video game for the Xbox and Microsoft Windows, published by Arkane Studios, released June 28th, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Kebab says, to Gary's point, Undertale, a certified classic, missed out on many Game of the Year awards because it released at the end of December, meaning many outlets like IGN and the Game Awards themselves never even shortlisted it for any category.
There you go.
Game of the Year awards need to be after the year is over.
I agree.
I hear you, Kebabs. And from the other side of that conversation, what I'll tell you is once you get to January, people really don't give a shit about the last year anymore. This is like not on you guys, the audience or whatever, but it's that thing as a content creator, both when we were at IGN and now it's Kind of Funny. And how do you frame stuff? And we're not so much as Kind of Funny. We don't fucking care. You're going to come watch anything because you love us because we're us. But how do you put stuff in a thumbnail and a headline to do it? People want to have those conversations in December. They don't want to have them in January.
No, I get it.
January is when you switch over.
Everybody wants to be talking about
the top 25 coming this year. Most anticipated, blah, blah, blah.
I get it.
But again, you can come watch DICE. Great, great award hosts there. Usually, we'll see this year. God damn it. Rocket Guardian says, more of a you're right. Yes, Jessica Chobot is definitely a better host. Got me. Got again. I don't care about this.
Are you doing the DICE Awards again this year?
We'll see. No announcements at this time. There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily. This has been Gary Whitta. I want to run you through not only, I know I've already talked about this week's host, but I figure it's time to start talking about next week. Thursday, it's me. This is tomorrow, me and Imran. Friday, Imran and Fran, because of course me, Tim, Nick are going to London. London, baby. Hit up MC Fixture for the community events. We'll see everybody there. We can't wait to see you. We'll see you at our thing. Community events are community things. However, remember Gamescast Thursday, 2 p.m., patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Tim, myself, Fran, Imran. However, next week, if you are international, you probably forget. It is American Thanksgiving next week, meaning that we are actually giving people time off. So it looks like this. Monday, Imran and Fran. Tuesday, Imran and Gary Whitta. Have you guys worked together before?
Yes, we've done a couple of shows together.
And then the Gamescast is Monday, 2 p.m. Fran, Imran, and Andy Cortez. Then, of course, we're off the rest of the week. So I think there's still things going up on YouTube. I don't have the calendar in front of me, but things are happening. But you know how it is. The normal show's still there.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
I'm flying back from London.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
But actually, on Thanksgiving Day?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
What do I care? I've seen Thanksgiving a bunch.
We won't be doing any of the other morning shows, right?
No other morning shows. So it's just Games Daily, Monday and Tuesday. Nothing in the afternoons, or you know what I mean? That I think, but you still get a Gamescast, obviously, but I mean the one from before, and then you also get the Kind of Funny podcast, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh my God, the Kind of Funny podcast is Andy, Joey, and Cool Greg. I'm excited to see what happens if you guys burn down the house when we're not here. None of the founders here Monday and Tuesday. What'll happen? Nobody, I guess Friday either. I digress. Gary, it's always a pleasure. Do you want to pimp anything? Are you still Twitch streaming? You got more space?
Yeah, Wednesday night's my regular night. I'll be on tonight, 7 p.m. Pacific time, twitch.tv/GaryWhitta. I don't know what I'll be doing yet. Maybe playing a new game, maybe playing an old game.
Okay.
Maybe doing a little bit of both. We'll see.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll be there.
Ladies and gentlemen, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you.